Hello, I'm Jason, and welcome to episode 12 of my podcast here on pointsinfocus.com. The topic for today is an age-old question that I see all over the place. And the question is, what lens should I get next? And some people do a really good job with this, and they include all kinds of relevant information, like their interests, what they're trying to accomplish, what they're kind of looking for, and, you know, things like that. And others, well, they don't do so well. They throw out the question, and they don't really have information or provide information about, you know, what their interests or how they see the world or whatever. And this podcast is really for that latter group. That it always frustrates me is somebody who gets asked the question, but on the same token, I understand a little bit of why the vagary happens, and that's what I want to talk about today. So let's jump right in. Why? I think one of the reasons why there's an inherent sort of vagary or vagueness or where this sort of stems from is maybe a mistaken belief that there's a progression in photography or in photo gear, that you get something and then you get something else and then you get something else, and each of these things build on top of each other in an order. And if it's not maybe that, maybe the thought is that there's a important, like a scale of importance. If I drew an analogy maybe to woodworking, it would be kind of like a table saw is a really important tool. There's a lot of things you can do with a table saw, basically, that you don't, like another tool, like say a compound miter saw, doesn't, it can only do a small portion of what the table saw can do, but the table saw can be pressed to do pretty much almost everything that a compound miter saw does. So that makes a table saw sort of a really important tool to have to start with. And then there's like, you know, a drill press. Being able to drill square holes is a really important thing in if you're going to use holes as part of your woodworking to join things, or you're going to use bolts or screws. So having a drill press is a really important kind of second tool. And then you get into sort of more vagaries of, you know, maybe a bandsaw or maybe a jointer or a planer. And you can sort of go, well, you know, all these things are useful, but there's things you can't do without, say, like a table saw or a drill press, that if you had a jointer, well, that doesn't cut a, you know, piece of wood or rip down sheet stock or something like that. So there's a kind of a clear-ish order of importance in various tools. In photography, obviously you need a camera and obviously you need a lens. But insofar as lenses go, the next lens that you need, there is no how and what and why are something would be important is shaped by you, by your eye, by the way you shoot, the way you see the world, the way you want to shoot, the things you shoot. And I mean, so for example, most people starting out in photography start out with like an 18-55 f3.5 to 5.6 zoom lens. That's kind of like the standard for APS-C or DX Nikon crop cameras. And so where do you go from there? Well, it's got a wide angle end, it's got a telephoto end, it's not real fast, they're generally kind of compact, and you might think that the next thing you need is a 55 to 200 or 300, or that you need a 10-18 or something like that. But that isn't really necessarily the case. For example, if the bulk of your shooting is your child inside, you know, playing or doing whatever, that maybe the next lens you want is something like a 30 f1.4. it's right smack in the middle of that 18 to 55 range, so you know, it's not giving you more focal lengths to choose from, but that f1.4 aperture gives you so much more light collection ability compared to the kit lens that you'll be able to freeze, you know, or have motion freezing shutter speeds more easily in darker environments, or you'll have shallower depth of field, which is something that is a aspect that really sets apart. It's one of the aspects that a lot of people see that really feel set apart the serious photographer and serious photography from, you know, point and shoots and cell phone cameras. I mean, you could even say being able to fake shallow depth of field is one of the really key things that Apple has been working on in the iPhone 7 Plus's, you know, dual camera system, that it's prohibitively difficult to make a camera for a phone that has real shallow depth of field, but it's possible to use the advanced processing to make something kind of look right-ish. And so, I mean, but this is a completely different, you know, like, these are sort of two different directions. So, like, for example, when I started being serious into photography, well, almost a decade ago, I started with a 18 to 55 zoom, and that was part of the kit, Digital Rebel kit that I got. And I quickly started going towards longer and longer lenses. I borrowed an old Canon 35 to 105. I bought a 28 to 135, and then I bought a 70 to 300. And all of this was stemmed around, I was shooting the vast majority of my photography was outside during the day, so light wasn't a concern to me. Having fast lenses wasn't really a concern to me. And my eye and the subject matter that I was interested in shooting at the time, primarily birds and wildlife, demanded longer and longer focal lengths. On the other hand, a friend of mine that was sort of getting started at the same time, he very quickly jumped to a 50 f1.8. He's married. He has a daughter. His daughter was really young. He wanted to take pictures of her when they were inside and doing whatever. And the fact that he couldn't illuminate the inside of his house to, you know, exterior daylight standards meant that he needed a faster lens to let in more light, to get fast shutter speeds so that he could photograph his daughter playing or doing whatever. And that was his next lens move. And so I guess what I'm trying to say here, in sort of a maybe a roundabout way, is the first thing you have to do when you're thinking I need a new lens is think about sort of what your frustrations are. Why are you, you know, what is it that you're frustrated with? Is it like me where I needed a longer lens? Is it, you know, do you find that you're always shooting at 18 millimeters and it's not wide enough? Or are you maybe like my friend who found that without having a really fast lens, he couldn't get sharp pictures of his daughter. They were always just blurry messes. And so that's kind of like the first place to really start in your introspective look before you jump into asking the question is, you know, what is it that you feel you need? Now, those are obviously, that's kind of the easy way to go about it. Like, you know I'm always frustrated that my lens is not long enough, so I need to get something longer. That's easy. It's a little harder to put your finger on sometimes more nebulous things like depth of field or feel or the combination of the two. And in these cases, it's sometimes it's useful if you're going to ask the question or start the discussion. If you have some idea of some other photographer's work that's reflective of the kind of thing that you're thinking about shooting or you're interested in shooting, that if you're you know, if you're interested, you know, if you can show somebody, if you can, when you're saying, help me, I don't know what lens that I need, but this guy's pictures is what I'm, what I'd like to be able to accomplish. And I kind of can get there, but I don't understand what leap I need to make to get that last bit. That can go a huge or a long way towards helping anybody you're asking to be able to figure out sort of how to push you in the right direction. It makes that information makes it easier for the somebody who knows knows about photography, obviously the person you're asking presumably, to be able to look at it and say, well, the difference between this picture and your picture is, you know, depth of field, or it's obviously he's doing X or whatever. On the same token, there's also you could take a sort of more objective approach to this, which is, and I'm sorry, I can only say how to do, you know, I can only provide a guide for Lightroom, but most raw software probably has some way of coming up with this information, or most digital image management packages. But I'm most familiar with Lightroom, so that's where I'm going to kind of constrain this to. But digital photography is a huge boon if you're a information pack rat. If you want to know what lens was used to take this picture and what camera and what autofocus point and what every setting in the camera was and, you know, what the focal length and the aperture and the shutter speed and the ISO and all of this information. If you want to know all of that information, digital has become is a huge boon because that all gets saved in every picture you take. With film, obviously, you had to write all that down, which meant you could only really write down so much information before you kind of like were spending more time writing notes than taking pictures. And most good raw or image management packages, for example, Adobe's Lightroom, has a way to search on that information. And in Lightroom, you bring up the filter toolbar. I think you hit the backslash key to bring that up. And then one of the things there is metadata. And if you click on that, one of the columns that comes up for the filters for metadata, you can just change, you can click on the top of the column and change the column from, say, date or location or whatever to something like focal length and or lens. If you have multiple lenses, you can filter by lenses and then you can look at the focal lengths. And Lightroom will tell you how many pictures fall into each category. So, you know, like an 18 to 55 would have focal lengths of 18, 19, 20, and so on, all the way up millimeters, all the way up to 55 millimeters. And for each of those that you've taken a picture in, it'll say like, you know, 18 millimeters, parentheses, 20 pictures, close parentheses. And you can look at that and you can get a breakdown of sort of where on the lens you work. For example, I can look at my lenses and I see that I tend to work at the extremes. I'm either going to be at as wide as it can go, say 18 millimeters, or as long as it can go, say 55 millimeters. I don't tend to do as much in the middle. Part of that is my eye tends towards the extremes. I tend towards either wanting a really wide angle or a really telephoto, a look at the picture, at life, at world around me. But you can use that information to inform and temper this discussion too. For example, if you know by looking at this information that the vast majority of your pictures are being taken at, say, 55 millimeters, then you might consider, you know, if your frustrations and everything else, you might consider something longer, like a 55 to 200 or a 55 to 300. And that you should it's on one hand, you can use the numbers, the hard data to help inform a decision. But on the other hand, you shouldn't be ruled by it. And I say this because it becomes really easy to get caught up in the idea that, well, because I don't take any pictures at 18 millimeters, I don't need a wider angle lens. Even if you know, for instance, that you're sort of frustrated by not being able to shoot wide angle. And I mean, I could use myself as an example. Back when I was doing my early photography, I didn't shoot a lot at 18 millimeters because it was not sort of it wasn't wide enough, actually. That when I ended up getting a 10 to 22, which gave me a lot wider field of view, I actually used that lens more than looking at the statistics would suggest that I would have, because it's a wide angle lens, because it was so much wider than what I could do before I got it, that basically I wasn't taking pictures at 18 millimeters originally because it just wasn't wide enough. But when I got a wider lens, then I was taking pictures because it lined up with my view of the world. And that's why I say don't use data as a direction on its own, but you can use it to inform your thoughts and your direction. The final sort of point that I kind of want to make here, because I mean, this isn't a whole, you know, this isn't a dissertation level topic really, that is, there's one other thing you have to be careful of, in my opinion, and that's being careful of and being aware of how, you know, when you're shooting stuff, when you just shot stuff or when you're preparing to shoot stuff, that can be a bias on its own. And I've gone through this, that when I was starting out and getting, you know, more and doing, you know, a lot of bird photography. Bird photography in Florida is a seasonal thing. It starts around the beginning of February, end of January, and it runs until somewhere in May. And then for me, it just gets to, there's still some birds around, you know, for the summer. But for me, after mid-May, it's way too hot for me to want to be out doing a lot of bird stuff. And so my sort of annual pattern was go out, do bird photography, you know, focus heavily on bird photography from January or December or February, depending on, you know, wherever, but for the winter and the spring. And then for the summer, I would go into, that was when I would try and focus mostly on doing product reviews and product photography for the site and that kind of thing, because I could work inside in air conditioning and I didn't have to deal with, you know, 90%+ humidity, you know, or whatever days. And the point here though is every year in like November, running into the start of bird season, I would be looking forward to going and doing my bird photography. And that would prompt me to start looking at big telephoto lenses. And I was always looking for a way to get a longer lens. And even when I got my 100 to 400, I was always looking for a way to get a longer lens. And, you know, oh, well, I could, I mean, I would look at things like, well, I could get a 300-28. Those are only like 30, well, at the time, they were only like $3,500. And I could put a 2X teleconverter behind it, which would give me a 600-56. And that's 200 millimeters longer than a 400. You know, that kind of thing. I was looking for a 500 or a 600 millimeter focal length, but trying to figure out how to do it within reason. As bird season started winding down towards, you know, April or so, I would start looking forward to knowing that, okay, I'm going to be shooting product photography. You know, I'm going to be working in the studio. One of the things that's very important with product photography is controlling depth of field. You want to have the backgrounds be blown out or blurred, and so that they don't have any texture or, you know, detail, usually, as if you're doing like on white, like I do for Points in Focus for the site here. But you also want to make sure that the whole product is in focus. And the normal way to do that is with tilt movements, which that's actually a pretty good topic for another podcast or an article or something to that effect. But with tilt movements where you can adjust the size of the depth of field by changing the sort of the angle of the two planes that form the near and far limit, but you don't affect how sharply it blurs out. So you can maybe you could do something like you could shoot an eye, you could shoot an iPhone, you know, on a slight angle and have the whole phone in focus, but shoot it at f2.8 so that once you got away from the phone, the depth of field fell off very quickly. And I would start looking, because I knew that, I would start looking at tilt shift lenses and 45 or 90 millimeter tilt shift lenses, or, you know, even longer tilt shift lenses potentially. And how about macro with a tilt shift lens? And you can see what I'm saying. And because to date, I haven't bought either. I don't own a 300-28, a 500 or a 600, and I don't own a tilt shift lens. And it really came down to, these were major thoughts, major parts of my sort of photography, if you will, but they weren't the only thing I was doing. But if I had been looking to buy at those specific points in time, I would buy a lens, or if I was asking about lenses potentially, I would be heavily shifted into those directions. And another example is, in a few weeks, hopefully, I'll be going out to the American Southwest, and I fully intend, while I'm at places like the Grand Canyon and Zion, to do some night astrophotography and hopefully even some like Milky Way photography. And at least, weather permitting, obviously. Now, for that kind of photography, you generally need a fast lens. You can do it with an F4 lens, but you compromise quality because you have to push the ISO up higher. You can do it with an F2.8 lens. But what you really want for the best quality is like an f1.4 lens. Well, f1.4 zooms are few and far between, if they even exist at all. I can't think of any off the top of my hand. So that really means like an f1.4 prime. So for me, shooting full frame, a wide angle f1.4 prime would be something like Canon's EF 24mm f1.4L USM II. That's a $1,700 lens. And like most photographers, I'm not made of money. Knowing that, though, there's a lot of thought running through my head about, well, how could I get my hands on one? I mean, sure, I could rent one, and I don't necessarily have a problem with renting a lens, except for when your 2-week rental or your 3-week rental, and for a 2-week trip to make sure that I have the lens before the trip and I have time to get it back after the trip in case there's, you know, any kinds of problems, I'm really talking about a 3 or 4 week rental for a 2-week trip. But that ends up being an appreciable fraction of the cost of the lens. And to me, I get pictures out of it, but it never seems like a useful thing when you're paying, say, $500 or $600 for a lens that you're going to use, you know, for 2 weeks, or have for 2 or 3 weeks, when the lens is only $1,500 or $1,600. And yeah, I know that's all of that's a lot of money, but to me, it's like, I'd rather use what I have and not spend the $500, or I'd rather buy the whole, you know, buy the lens and spend the whole $1,700, and then I can actually put it to use in other places, you know, in the future. But anyway, I know right now I'm already sort of thinking about, well, what about a 24-1.4? And I know if I come back and I have a lot of really good astrophotography stuff, I'm going to really be thinking about, what about a 24? What about trying to get a 24-1.4? Even though, like, for my photography, I know that that's a lens that I won't use an awful lot, if ever, for things other than astrophotography. I have two zooms. One's image stabilized that cover 24 millimeters, And for most landscapes, I don't need an f1.4 lens for the landscape. I'm probably going to be shooting stop down from that, and I'm probably going to put filters over it. And I mean, you see what I'm saying is while you need to be, I think while I'm suggesting that before you ask what lens should I get next, you should be introspective and look at what you're doing so that you can at least say, I am primarily interested in street photography. This is the lens I have. This is the work of a photographer that I would like to, you know, move my images in this kind of direction. What lens, you know, of, or what of these lenses, unless you have better, you know, better ideas, is, you know, should I be really seriously considering? And on the same token, though, like I said, you also really should have to, you really want to be aware of the fact that, you know, if you just went out and did some street photography and that was really cool and you really were psyched and you got some really good images, but maybe you're not going to do it again, you know, do you really want to invest money into the kind of thing that would be good for that, or but maybe not something else? Or, you know, in that case, you want to make sure that what you're also thinking about is more applicable to other things that you might be interested in doing. And with that said, I'm finally going to have a podcast that comes in at under a half an hour after 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks of hour and a half long podcasts. And so I'm going to, you know, wrap this up. I have a link in the show notes to one of the Lightroom plugins that can be used to figure out how many pictures you've taken at any given focal length, aperture, shutter speed, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole myriad of them. I don't necessarily endorse any specific plugin that this is just one that I found or that I've used at least a couple of times in the past for this kind of work where I'm trying to figure out what I need or what I'm doing or what I use the most. So thank you for listening. I appreciate your support. Check out the show notes. It's episode 12, pointsinfocus.com/podcast. And it'll be episode 12 in that list there. And until next time.